Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Los Angeles and LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight with Bobby Bell.
Good evening.
And her husband, Jim, over there. He no longer holds up the wall.
No, he has
a real chair. He now kind of has his own chair.
One of these days we'll mic him.
I know, and headphones. Well, you know, we could sneak him on at any time. And he would never know.
No, he wouldn't.
Until we caught him snorking. So, what's going on, Bobby? What's happening? What's going on?
Oh, my goodness. Here we are in October. Isn't that fabulous?
We are.
And last week's show, which I wasn't on, was so much fun. I listened live with you and Russ.
We had a ball.
And I want very much to read the book, The Fountain. That was the right title, The Fountain. The Fountain. Right. And let's see, my husband here in the studio, Jim, and I are being recognized a week from tonight by our City of Santa Clarita's Arts Commission. They are honoring us at their monthly meeting to sort of honor and celebrate the cultural programming that our business has brought to the Santa Clarita Valley. The Buckaroo Bookshop,
right,
and the concert series, I think, primarily, but the many art events that we did when we had our brick-and-mortar store, and
right,
that's quite an honor. So that's happening a week from tonight.
And I would love to be there, except you know where I'll be.
You will be here.
I will be here, hopefully with Henry Park sitting in your chair. And reading the book.
Yeah.
Having had read the book.
It sounded fantastic. You were telling me today about it.
It's by Katie Salidas, and she's a Las Vegas writer. And it's a tremendous story. It truly, truly is. I ripped through that story, and I haven't read a book that fast in years. And it just went zoom.
Oh.
It's such a compelling story. Anyway, let's get down to some business. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. Of course, Tuscany Bay is in business to get you new writers started. We'll help you format, help you edit, proofread, get your books done and copied and on the shelf and ready for you to sell or give away to your friends. I mean, that's what we all do anyway. We all give our books away to our friends. And I don't know if any of you are aware of the Jack Del Rio series by writer Richard Polinelli, who also is part of Tuscany Bay Books. But his finale of the Jack Del Rio series, In Games, is available for pre-order on Amazon, and the release date is October 30th this year. The first two books, Reservations and Betrayals, are also available on a pre-order to be released on October 30th under the Tuscany Bay banner as well. So, and these books will also be available. There will also be a three-book in one volume, so they're going to doing a compilation, released on October 30th in both an ebook and print format, and the ebook is available for pre-order now on Amazon.com. So congratulations, Richard, and we need to get busy on Bruce's book. Okay.
Kudos to Richard.
And if you want to get a hold of Black Dog or Tuscany Bay, our number is 805-795-3165. And we'll be more than happy to work with you on any new project you have going. Also, it is brought to you by Out West, and that's your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyles. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. I always want to say this, Bobby, I know who wrote this. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Their online address is www.scvoutwest.com. That's still the correct email?
Yes, it is.
Correct web address? Okay.
Yep.
And their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. And for their last concert of their concert series in 2017, takes place on the 29th of this month.
27th.
Is it the 27th?
Yep. Only to be sure you get it on your calendar correctly. Friday the 27th.
Okay. Friday. Because I want tickets.
I know. Okay. I have you down. Oh, I have you down. Okay, yes, okay. I do.
And at Sir Concert Series, and that is Almeda Bradshaw.
She's so excited.
And she is so fun. And she sat in here one night and just had us tickled.
She's so excited.
And she's a great musician and a good singer and just a lovely, lovely lady.
Yeah.
And the number for tickets for that is 661-347-9700. If you tell them that you heard this on the Writer's Block, the tickets go from $25 to $20, and if you have like 100 people coming in with you, then they're down to like whatever.
$5.
$5. So anyway, that's the Out West Concert Series, Friday the 27th of October. Mm-hmm. Okay, and since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload. That's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today, 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski or any of the fine Target TFM staff. Tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry, bar none. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTO. Call today. No fooling. You won't be sorry. And that is the truth. Okay, let's get into our artist for this evening or our writer for this evening, because he's, I think beyond being a good writer, I think he's probably somewhat controversial. I'm not sure, but I'm going to take a wild stab at that one. Our writer tonight is a gentleman named Adam Dreese. And he kicked off his indie author career with his best-selling steampunk meets fairy tale series, The Yellow Hoods, which struck a chord with the kids 9 to 15 and adults. Okay. After four books in the series, the former software architect put out two more young adult books, the post-apocalyptic fantasy The Wizard Killer, Season 1, and then his science fiction novel, The Man of Cloud 9. The first two novels in the Yellow Hood series, as well as The Wizard Killer, have been finalists for Book of the Year awards from the Independent Authors Network. When he's not working on his next book, Adam can be found giving talks at schools, libraries, associations, as well as Comic-Con type events like Calgary Expo and Fan Expo Canada, on subject from how to get one's ideas out, stepping outside of one's comfort zone, how to give a successful book signing. Along the way, Adam has faced many challenges, including working around his dyslexia, which we're going to talk to him about tonight, because we've actually never talked to a writer about dyslexia before, and needing to be ruthless with his time and energy. Ruthless, I love that word. With his time and energy in face of his severe asthma, something that I need to talk to him about as well, because I also have it, and chronic abdominal scar pain. I do not have that. He's become an inspiration to some and a symbol of tenacious hard work to others. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Adam Dreese. Adam, are you with us? You hung up.
Oh, no.
Adam.
Adam, are you there?
Oh, Adam, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you now.
Yay!
Okay.
Welcome to the Writer's Block.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And in lieu of hanging around in Ontario, or not even Ontario, Calgary, he's actually hanging out in Orlando, Florida right now. So it's quite late for Adam at this point.
Yeah. What took you to Orlando from Calgary?
Well, my wife was coming down for a Gartner conference, and I decided to tag along and use it as a writing retreat and actually kick off writing my third book of The Wizard Killer.
And how's that working out for you?
Really great. I mean, it's the first time we've ever left the kids. I've got three kids, and I'm also a stay-at-home dad. So my mom's taking care of the kids and has since Friday, and we're flying home tomorrow.
Very cool.
Nice.
Now, here's the question of the evening. I have read the Dragon Slayer. I read season one and season two.
The Wizard Killer?
Oh, The Wizard Killer.
The Wizard Killer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I was worried.
Maybe
I read the wrong book.
It should have been a dragon. I don't know. The Wizard Killer. Season one and season two. And I just want to have, I have a very basic question for you. Where the yig did this story come from?
Where the yig? Yeah, we like that. We like that word. Where the yig?
For the listeners, yig is the swear that the character
is the F word in Futurama.
I figured that out after the fourth or fifth time it was being used, and I thought that's actually pretty cool.
It is.
And actually, I had one fan who figured out its origin, and it's one of those kind of moments as a writer you hear like, how does anybody else know that extremely obscure reference? But anyway. You know, I'd written four books in my Steampunk Meets Fairy Tale series. And the last two books I wrote four books in 2 years. And I was taking care of my kids full time, and I could just slog through and try to get the fifth book out, but I just had nothing left in the tank on that side. So I needed a bit of a break. And I had this story idea for The Man in Cloud Nine, that's my sci-fi thriller. So I started to write that, and then I kind of felt out of balance. That one's more cerebral. It's 70 years in the future. It's dealing with nanobots and kind of like a Steve Jobs, Elon Musk kind of main character. But there's no fight scenes. And as I'm writing this, and as with many of us who have that that wonderfully corrosive self-doubt, you know, part of me goes, well, you know, you're trying to get this other book out. You know what might tip the scales towards failure? How about you challenge yourself to write a serial every week? So now, when I started writing 25 years ago, I wrote these bubblegum superhero style serials, you know, the kind that always ended with next week, find out what happens to, you know, the main characters and whatnot.
Of course. And
so I wanted to write something that was diametrically opposed to The Man of Cloud Nine, and I gave myself this challenge, and I looked around for something that would really grab me, and I like this idea of playing in the science fantasy space, taking those fantasy ideas like magic and mana and whatnot, and really trying to treat them almost like science fiction properties of physics-like ideas. And I literally was walking my kids to school, and I came across this idea to have this kind of almost Logan type tough guy, and then treat it truly like a serial for myself. So rather than kind of the architecture of stories for like a novel, what I wanted to do is, okay, this is where it's going. I'm going to treat this like a binge TV show. And so I just challenged myself to write these episodes rather than chapters and make them as tight as possible. And take those moments that normally where books try to let you breathe and relax for a moment and try to just dehydrate those out as much as I could.
You did.
And the challenge kind of built, and, you know, I got 10 episodes in 10 weeks, and then the 11th, and then the 12th, and then it started taking a little longer, and then that doubt's coming in, and I'm getting up to 16, 17, and we're coming right up to April, which is when Calgary Expo is, and that's our closest equivalent to San Diego Comic-Con, you know, 100,000 people.
Right.
And every previous one, I'd had a brand new book for that. And I'm telling my wife, we're walking our dog we had at the time, and she says, you know, I hear you saying, you know, you're feeling bad, you're not going to have anything new. She said, I thought maybe you'd be able to finish this off. Now, my wife is my anchor. And so doing that, I knew she was goading me. But it clicked, and the rest of the story came together, and I had not been so nervous to put out something since my first book, because in a lot of ways it was an experiment in format, in storytelling. It was going after a demographic that doesn't go after my Yellow Hoods books.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this joke that, you know, my Yellow Hoods fans, if I don't write something for them for a while, you know, I'll get some angry phone calls and emails.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't put out an installment of The Wizard Killer, they'll show up and bug me.
Oh, my gosh.
Write it. And I was shocked at how many people it connected with. And so, you know, that fueled me to do season two. And we just finished recording the audiobook for season one that should be out in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I've finally kicked off the season three. So that's kind of the genesis of a lot of it.
Well, I have to be honest. I got... you know, about three quarters of the way through season one, And now, my first comment to myself was, why are you calling this a season? Mm-hmm. Well, you have not just now explained that. So I'm good with that now.
Yeah.
But as I told you on the phone the other night, how many times does this poor bastard have to die? I mean, every time you turn around, he's stabbing himself in the chest with his short sword.
He
time jumps back and forth, and it's like really, it's hard to follow if you're not really paying attention.
I think I'm too old. I think I need to be nimble. My brain needs to be more nimble. The jumping back is what you're saying, Jim. I had that challenge too.
You probably need read before 4 o'clock.
Well, probably so. Adam,
one of the things. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say was, when I came out with it, storytelling style, I wasn't sure exactly, how well are those semi-lucid moments going to be when it's similar to a flashback, but it's almost like you're changing time.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's why for season two, I make that even more clear, and in season three, we get all the answers. But very much following that kind of TV show that kind of draws you in, it's not giving you all the answers up front. It's kind of making you work that way through the season, and that was part of the model that I used for writing it.
Right, right. Well, never having been involved in any fantasy writing or reading, I've never really read anything.
I've never read anything quite like this.
fantastical before.
Exactly.
And it was an experience reading your stuff. I have to be quite honest. And it wasn't that I didn't like it, because I did. I just found myself going, wow. I mean, this poor guy, he's everywhere.
He's created, you've created a whole new
world.
Unless there's the Karns and the Wunners, and there's, in book two, we have the Wind Spiders? And we're not trying to do spoiler alerts here, but I felt like is there a glossary? Like, can I look
up?
Like, what's a Wunner?
What I was doing it in a lot of ways is you take some things that are, particularly for fantasy readers, that idea of, zombies and a lot of these, overly done classics, right? And then how do you make somebody who knows those to pieces and shift things just enough where you throw them off and you let their assumptions or expectations kind of play against them?
Yeah, I totally get that.
That was part of it, right? The idea, like, you can have that hive mind, but it's got a concept of needing a means of communicating, and when magic fails, like in the story, creatures just end up standing around almost unable to communicate, thrown off.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like they communicate with their mind in a lot of different ways. And I found, you don't speak English. I don't see you speaking, yet you're talking to me.
Right. There's all kinds of interesting things. They don't, the characters don't really seem to need to eat or drink very much.
Right.
And our main character, our nameless main character,
our protagonist has to drink.
It's like, I want to give him a name. Like, nope. Once again, book two, there's still no name.
I know. It's like our nameless character is Bruce, and he's hanging out someplace.
Well, and I think our nameless character is a man.
I believe so.
Although at one point I began to sort of wonder, and then I think I began to pay closer attention to other descriptions.
Well, I think in season two we did find out that I think he is a man. Am I correct?
Yeah.
He is a man.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. Good. Okay.
and to help the listeners, the story's written first person.
Yes.
Right.
So you know when you think about yourself, you don't tend to think about your own gender as you're trying
actually, you're
to
right.
survive
right.
in
no.
the
right. Yeah, and I thought that was interesting that you chose to write it first person, because that does let us into his questions of where he is and is the magic working and where's my sword and where's my pistol and we're kind of discovering things along with him as he's describing what he sees or And he can weather amazing pain.
Right.
He's able to weather just amazing pain.
Part of that, a number of years ago, I went through a situation where my appendix went horribly wrong, and it left me in horrific pain for 15 months. It turned our life entirely upside down. The kind of thing where you can be engaging on the most minimal level for about 2 hours before you need to lie down. And you don't really get sleep out of it. And I took the risk on surgery to try to clean that up and make my life better, which it did. Gave me chronic pain afterwards, but which was much, much easier to deal with. And so for those moments for that character, if you're left in the middle of nowhere and, you know, you get injured, you've got two choices. You just lay down and die, which makes the story kind of just come to a complete halt, which kind of ruins it. Or you find
power
within yourself to keep going.
Right. Yeah. So in book three, I read all of season one, and I'm about three quarters of the way through season
two, one and two
to prepare for tonight. Yeah. So I'll be very curious to read season three because it sounds like we get some answers in season three, or is it even later on?
Well, no. So basically, in season two, you start getting some answers. Start realizing that those flashback moments aren't necessarily him remembering his life. And in season three, there's three critical things, and I'm treating this kind of like a TV show. There's one point where if you don't start providing the payoff, you lose your audience. You get his name, you find out the version of him that you meet in the flashbacks at the end of book two are him,
right?
And you get to start completing that circle of, okay, how did he end up in that situation right at the beginning of book one?
Oh, good.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's that big question that I have.
That is a big question.
Big question.
He wakes up with his sword through his chest.
Yeah.
So, it's almost like if you're a gamer, you know, like a teen gamer, you would really get this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's... It's funny that you mention that, because that is very much what it gets compared to. Uh-huh. It's like playing that video game, that discovering a world experience, kind of discovering who the character is,
right.
Their, you know, what's happened to them while they try to survive through it, and discovering creatures and situations that aren't what you'd expect.
Uh-huh.
And so... You know, one of the things for the readers to know, these are novella lengths. So part of writing with such high intensity, I can't keep that going for 90,000 words. I'll exhaust the reader. So that's why they're about 35,000 words, right? And there's things you can get away with in that format that you can't in other formats.
Right.
Like I don't do with Man of Cloud Nine or with the Yellow Hoods.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question quickly on the Yellow Hoods, because you were so kind to send us book five, and I'm kind of an early steampunk fan. I like so much about steampunk and still sort of learning the whole steampunk world. So that was the one that I started reading right away, and then I realized, I think I want to read that whole series, and I need to go back to book one. So then I jumped into Wizard Killer. But can you tell us a little bit about steampunk, and then what it is that captivates you about steampunk to put that a movement into your writing?
Well, the way that I think about it, I always think of kind of the Jules Verne novels, right? Like things like The Nautilus, or, you know, if somebody's not read that, I think of 1800s type of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with the invention of the steam engine, if we let our imagination run wild, what kind of things could we come up with? And the best analogy I use for today is, you know, we have microchip punk. We invented the microchip, and then our ideas went all over the place. Hey, I'm going to have this little box I can hold on the side of my head and talk to somebody on the other side of the planet. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You just take it for granted it's a cell phone.
Right.
So when I was, you know, the origin of the Yellow Hoods started with a bedtime story for my daughter, who was 9 at the time. And she was having trouble sleeping. And I just created this silly story about this wolf being terrorized by these three pigs, and he goes to her granny's house to knock on the door, and there's a good girl with a yellow hood instead of a little Red Riding Hood. And I just kind of crashed the fairy tales together, and she had a great belly laugh, and she slept no problem. And a couple of days later, when I was trying to write my first book, and I was stuck, she said, "Hey, Dad, could you just write that down? I don't want to ever forget that."
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down to try to write that, and then, you know, when I write, and it's both the writer in me and the former software architect in me, I always write for different audiences within the same document. And so the story started to get more layered and characters kind of fleshed out. And I ended up with this one critical moment. I have this 12-year-old female character, T, facing, you know, a villain with a flintlock pistol pointing at her.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I've got three choices. One, I could try to make this play out realistically, which is probably not going to go really well, and probably not the kind of book that I'd want my daughter to read. Two, I could throw in some magic, but that's going to feel like a cheat. Or three, can I throw in a little bit of invention? And I, you know, I already knew about steampunk ideas and that setting, and, you know, it varies from truly in the fantasy realm to people being very nailed down with the science, more from a sci-fi point of view. And so I decided to be more realistic. Just, I'm going to tilt the odds slightly in her favor or even them up. And I like the idea that I would bring the reader on this journey through that series. So it starts with what feels really familiar, like a small mountain town in the 1800s, really simple. And then the inventions and that history of the world, and as it leads up to basically what's like an airship war, that comes through with the story as you go. So as the plot gets richer, as the danger becomes more palatable, it all builds up to that book five. I'd be happy to send you the
I would like that very much.
And I took apart, the other thing is, you know, ever since I was little, and I still have the book on my shelf at home, it's got well-worn corners, I've loved fairy tales. And so, you know, I took that other element from that story I told my daughter, which is, you know, I deconstructed the fairy tales and nursery rhymes, and I asked myself, you know, the question of, you know, Ring Around the Rosie relates to the Black Plague. So what if I took Rub-A-Dub-Dub? You know, I can come up with a secret society named the Tub. It's always been led by butchers and bakers and candlestick makers. I can take apart the idea of Santa Claus.
Sure.
As two brilliant inventors in the mm-hmm. twilight years, Christoph Kringle and Nicholas Claus.
And
weave all
Illuminati.
Those elements into this story.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what a fertile imagination you have. I'm anxious to see and read all of what is still in you to pour out over the next several years, I would think.
let's break a little bit from your actual writing novels, and let's talk a little bit mm-hmm. about being an author with dyslexia. I can't mm-hmm. imagine what that is like. And I'm sure that our listeners, whom actually we have quite a few, would be interested.
And we may have readers, too.
We probably have some writers out there that are dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you manage to conquer, number one, the dyslexia and turn it into a writing career?
Well, you know, like for 25 years, I did nothing with my writing, right? There was all these other more important elements of life, or I would get to it later. And it was the medical events that changed that. But through my career in software, I came to learn that there's actually quite a few of us dyslexics, and we have a very visual way of thinking. So when it came to actually writing the story, the first thing I had to do, and it's the advice I give every new writer when I'm giving my talks or meeting for personal advice, I had to give myself permission to make a mess. You know, it's okay if I write a sentence that says, you know, they picked up the groceries and went into the rodent. And the reason for that is because at the microseconds where I was trying to write house, my brain said house rhymes with mouse. Mouse is a rodent. I wrote the word rodent. Or I just wrote garble.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's like my short-term memory is just corrupt when it's trying to pull forward how to spell something.
Mm-hmm.
I had to let myself just make a mess. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I'm like the worst person for critique groups, you know, like to give your first three chapters. I can tell you what the first three chapters are when I'm 89% done.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will write whatever pulls me the most. And then, you know, I'll reorder them and then I'll stitch them and I'll find the holes. Mm-hmm. So I had to find a process mm-hmm. that worked for me, just in terms of getting that story out and mm-hmm. then making sure I do three full rounds of revisions. And then I had to adapt, you know, most people kind of send it off to the editor and then they get it back and they make the changes and maybe send it to a proofreader. I go through two full rounds with my editor and then I have a small battalion of proofreaders, all to compensate because I'll accidentally written a word that your brain auto-corrects when it reads that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make sure that my quality bar is really high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one was giving myself permission to make a mess. Two, adapting my process. And three was recognizing that my dyslexia, it lets me write video.
Uh-huh.
Everything. Like when I'm writing, I am in the moment. I'm walking around the characters. I'm looking underneath. I'm capturing that. And apparently it has a really different feel because of it. So I have to look at it as, you know, it's a blessing that comes with some drawbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I can compensate for the drawbacks.
Interesting. Extremely interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I know that you have a very, very strong online presence and a lot of followers, I think, really on Twitter, right? You have a lot of Twitter followers.
Mm-hmm.
And you've really created a brand for yourself successfully. Can you share a little bit about your thought process on that? I'm sure many of our author listeners would be very interested in
yes.
how you got to that success.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got them spread between, you know, my newsletter, Twitter, Facebook, and elsewhere. You know, it all starts out with finding your genuine public voice. And one of those things is to recognize, you know, the person that I am online, it is genuine in me, but there are things that I will not talk about or get into mm-hmm. online at all because it's a public forum
mm-hmm.
and everything I do publicly affects brand. And a great example is early on when I was engaging with followers and trying to get that first 1,000 followers, I remember I was following another author who wrote children's books, and I was pretty interested in getting his books for my kids because he sounded like he was an awesome guy. And then he got into really adult material and really strongly political in that as well, and it just soured my opinion of that author.
Mm-hmm.
And now I didn't want to get his books because I didn't want to reward that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I do understand.
And that was one of the big lessons, because, you know, you've got to be genuine. You've got to be accessible. And, you know, I carve out part of each week to give back. And sometimes that means going to coffee with someone who is considering being an indie author and they've got their book. They're not sure what it's like. Well, I'll sit down and I'll share. Here's what I've done. Other times it can be, you know, if I've given a talk in particular, sometimes I'll get questions, you know, days or months afterwards where somebody wants my two cents on something, or, you know, they wanted information I gave, or they want to know if X or Y is a good idea. And part of my week is doing that, connecting with them, putting the effort there, being the kind of mentor and person that I wish I had run into when I started. Because when I started this in 2014, I didn't know anybody in the industry.
Right.
And since then, I've met a lot of amazing people along the way, including Susie Bedori, the author of The Fountain.
She was on last week.
You should absolutely read.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we did. She was on last week.
you know, I think a lot of it is about, one, You've got to find your genuine voice. Two, you've got to think that when you're putting stuff out there, it's not about you. Are you providing stuff that is of value to people? Mm-hmm. Are you engaging with them, or are you just trying to tell them, buy my book, uh-huh. buy my book?
Right.
Because that's going to turn everybody off.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really slippery slope you have to. And you know, when you first started writing 25 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of indie authors out there. So, I mean, there really wasn't probably very many people for you to talk to anyway. I mean, now they're everywhere. You know, we deal with, golly, a lot of them here. Mm-hmm. And we find them refreshing, most always refreshing. they're you know, intelligent, smart, well mm-hmm. put together people. Mm-hmm. Susan Vidori is a good example.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had great mm-hmm. success on Amazon, and then you got hit with a little challenge back in December.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you would want to share
can you explain that to our listeners? Oh, what they can possibly look out for?
So, I had decided I was going to bring my Yellow Hoods books and have them exclusive to Amazon, part of their KDP Select program, mm-hmm. which means if you have that subscription, Kindle Unlimited, you'd be able to read my books as part of your subscription.
Right.
I had a number of other author friends who've done rather well on that front, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to give it a try. I tried it a year or two before, but I'll try it again. Take some of their advice in terms of how I get the word out that the books are available. So put them on there and sign up for a couple of services. And I noticed within a couple of days, I have a strange spike. And they show you how many page reads, which is how Amazon determines mm-hmm. ultimately how much you're going to get paid. And so, you know, it goes from like 100 to like 25,000 one day to like back down to 100 the next day to then like 10,000. And you know, the software architect in me is like, okay, big red alert, that does not naturally happen.
Right.
So I wrote Amazon an email and said, hey, I just noticed this. I'm not sure what's going on. Here's the one promotion service that I used. I don't know if this is related to them or anything, but basically I'm raising the flag. And they kind of came back with you know, an email patting me on the head, and it's like, no, everything's all fine. And I replied to them, and this is where I'm sure the writer of my life was kind of enjoying this moment, because there was foreshadowing. And I said, okay, because I just want to make sure, like, double check, you're not going to like nuke my account or something, but this is all good. And they said, yeah, no, everything's fantastic. So on I went for the next 5 weeks, until all of a sudden, 11 o'clock at night, one night, I'm just about to put my phone down and go to sleep, and I get this email from Amazon that says, we're just writing to you to inform you that we have terminated your account and removing all of your books on grounds. We have detected some system-generated accounts have accessed your book. I sprung out of bed, ran downstairs to the computer. That's like, you know, you're here like, oh my God, I have no clue what's going on. I thought, okay, wait a minute, maybe this was related to that stuff. So I pull up that email thread. Oh, and they give you, and they say, listen, if you have any questions, here's an email address. So I send that email address like, hey, I don't know what's going on. Because my books had been selling more and more. Mm-hmm. I'd been getting more and more page reads. You know, it had gotten to like, you know, one day is $20 for that day, then 21, then 22, then 25. And it's like, okay, all my stuff's working. And then all of a sudden everything drops to zero. And they didn't just remove my Yellow Hood books. They removed all my books, whether or not it was in the program. And so I get back an email like a day or two later. It's like, oh, well, you know, we need time to investigate and whatnot. It's like, oh, okay. And, you know, that doubt monster I mentioned earlier is just roaming around in my head. It's like, you know, maybe you did something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't just do this arbitrarily, mm-hmm. or so I thought. So that was like on the Thursday. On the Monday, I'm online on Facebook, and I see in a Facebook group a woman mentions this curious thing she just saw, which is the exact same spike behavior as mine. And I thought, one, this is not me. Two, I can't jump into the middle of this thread and just tell this lady, hey, this is what just happened to me, because I might make her panic, or I'm going to end up in an argument, because that's like half of what Facebook is.
True enough.
So I thought, okay, how can I be more constructive? So I went and I wrote a blog post about what had just happened to me. And at the end of it, I thought, you know, I'll have a call to action, which is, hey, anybody who wants to help, right? Because I'm still getting a response from Amazon of, well, we need time to think about this and investigate. I said, you know, just tweet to Jeff Bezos and Amazon to say, hey, give Adam Dries back his books. And then that started to go viral. And the next morning, I put out a short video. And then the views on that shot up. And then, you know, my phone was just buzzing all the time with, okay, boom, more people have retweeted this. And by 7 p.m. on that Tuesday, so this has just been going on now for, let's see, 36 hours since I put out that blog post, mm-hmm. I got a phone call from Amazon, one with an apology, two saying, all my books have been just reinstated, and, you know, they wanted the matter considered, you know, closed and done and kind of sorry. But, I mean, I'd lost all that marketing money that I put into promotion. I lost all that momentum, and I had to start again from scratch. But this time, I didn't put my books in their program. And I've had success with not just on Amazon, but Kobo and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what had caused
But it was a big lesson.
Yeah, what had caused the spikes? Were they able to determine what had caused that to happen?
So it seemed to have been this service. So basically, what seems to be happening is scammers who will put up they will put up books which are not genuine, like it's just full of garbage material, mm-hmm. and they would have bots read those books. But if you just have bots going and reading those books all the time, they're kind of easier to pinpoint, from what I understand. So what they will do is sometimes they will take books that are listed in some newsletters in particular, or that hit number one in certain categories, and they will put those bots to read from those books and then go back to reading their scam books, right?
Wow.
It's like spreading it all around.
Wow.
Wow.
And then I came to realize that, wow, the way things are today, for $10, you could end up nuking somebody's career. Because I have, since I posted that stuff, I have gotten some of the worst sad stories of authors whose publisher had been hit with something like this, and they watched all their books suddenly go offline, and the author doesn't know what to do, and they at least needed somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. It's like stranger than science fiction.
I know, huh? It's like, you can't write this stuff.
You can't write this stuff.
No,
oh,
but I tell you,
gosh,
nothing
Adam.
Lights a fire underneath you more than everything being, you know, ripped out of your hands.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
Grab it back.
I'll tell you, Adam, it's just another chapter in your book.
Yeah, I know that's going to show up. If you've not written it in somewhere already, it will happen at some point.
I have the question for you, Mr. Dries. Mr. Dries, you know what the question is. Have you ever had?
I do know what the question is.
Have you ever had? Do you ever count on having? Will you ever have writer's block?
Or don't believe in? The writer's block.
You know what? I think of it more as burnout.
Mm-hmm. And writer's burnout.
It's where I realize that I have been pulling from the well too much,
mm-hmm.
and now it's starting to feel like drudgery, and I have too many other things sitting in my mind, and I need to go and recharge me.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I'll go and, you know, binge on a favorite TV show, or I'll take, you know, 2 days which are all dedicated to family, and it's like the back of my mind gets to relax a little bit and walk around with the Rubik's Cube trying to get the solution to whatever scene.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've written 9 books since 2014. I kind of joke, you know, those 25 years that I did nothing, I then realized you could put the car into gear, and I've just been shooting out
since
really fast.
Since 2014? I've only written
since 2014.
Two since 2014.
Well, Mr. Jim, what's your excuse?
I don't have one.
Oh, I know. You've just been on fire, and I think there sounds like there's a lot more to come.
And, you know, doing things like finding new music, which I'll turn to, that's one of the ways in which I engage with my followers and subscribers, is sometimes I'm asking them, like, look, I'm trying to find some really motivational music to make me feel like this. What do you guys have?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get, like, some of the most amazing bands that I've never heard of, Soundwave, Sabaton, you know, all kinds of stuff, and that'll pick me right back up. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's doing something crazy, like, you know, trying this couple getaway and doing a writer's retreat. You know, there's nothing to bug me. I just sat in a coffee shop. I've got 6 hours to myself mm-hmm. for 5 days. Mm-hmm. And that gave me 2 days to kind of crack the back of, you know, this whole plot line and how do I resolve everything really nicely and cleanly for mm-hmm. the wizard killer. It's going to get a great payoff through season three and bang. So, yeah, I absolutely believe in it. But I think there's things you can do to kind of recharge the self and break that block.
Well, we're kind of getting short of time, Adam. Can you tell our readers where they can find you online and email addresses? And I know you have it's adamdreese.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dreese is spelled D-R-E-E-C-E. So you've got adamdreese.com. On Twitter, I'm at Adam Dreese.
Uh-huh.
On Facebook, I'm Adam Dreese Author. People can also get me at adam.dreese@adzopublishing.com. My books are available at Amazon, Kobo, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, pretty much absolutely everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And you have a YouTube channel too, right?
Yes. And yes, YouTube. I do. And actually, I'm going to be kicking off a podcast with my daughter in the next couple of weeks called the Long Kim Podcast.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, fun. Will you please post about that on our Writer's Block Facebook page, please?
So, absolutely.
So yes, if you would.
Yeah, we would love it if our author guests would, whenever you're posting something, bring it on over to the Writer's Block page so that our audience that listened to you tonight can keep hearing about what you've got going on.
And it's the Writer's Block radio show.
Yes, the Writer's Block radio show.
Right.
Got it.
If you go to Writer's Block, it takes you to the booking page.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have enjoyed having you with us.
Yes, thank you for giving us your time on this night of your writer's retreat with your wife.
I know it's late.
Orlando.
But it's been a hoot having you, Adam. Thanks so much for coming and sharing our hour with us.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thanks, and I look forward to talking to you guys.
Outstanding. And make sure that you let us know and keep us informed on what's going on with new stuff. And you can always send Jerry an email at guestwb@yahoo.com.
Perfect.
Okay?
Yep.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Okay,
guys.
Good night.
Have a great night. Evening.
Adam Dreese.
Okay, I have to finish season two tonight.
Okay. Wow.
That cleared up a few things for me. Now I can see this to the end of at least that.
The guy writes out there stuff, but he's really together.
Oh well, yeah. Well,
totally
I always,
together.
Well, I knew that.
Oh
I
yeah.
Knew I was just having blonde moments or something. I don't know.
You know, I always swear that I'm going to do this at the end of every show, and tonight I'm going to do it. I am. I'm going to do it, Jim.
Oh.
I'm going to belch. No. For the writers who are coming on to the show and for the writers who actually are interested in being on the Writer's Block, the address, the web address that you want to call or the email address that you want to contact is guestwb@yahoo.com, and that gets you right to our booking manager. And she will hook you up as best she can. We are now booked through April of next year. There is a waiting list that she'll start booking again in December. So please, if you are interested, do that and get on the list to get in the show. And because if you send us books, we read them. We don't just talk about a book that we haven't read. We always read your books. We are probably the two most well-read people in the United States at this point. this is our third year, and we read a book a week.
Yep, we do.
Or
more.
Sometimes two. I mean, I read three this
or
week.
Or more. Exactly.
So, next week we have with us, actually Bobby Jean will not be here next week because she's, of course, getting her award, her and her husband Jim. Next week we have with us Katie Salidas. She is the Las Vegas author of a book named Dissension. It's a futuristic vampire story. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I just blew through it. It went so fast, and I believe there's going to be a sequel of some sort, I hope, because now I have to follow this vampire, and it's a woman. And next, sitting in your chair next week, I believe, will be Henry Park. He's going to come
good.
And join me in the studio.
Great.
And so that should be a lot of fun. And for, let's see, what I think that's about all we have for tonight. I think we might even get off the air on time.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. What isn't that wonderful? So from Bobby Jean and Jim and myself and the Writer's Block, this is LA Talk Radio. We'll see you next Thursday right here at 7 p.m. on Pacific Time. And we are out of here.